Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising kids in a culture saturated with media and technology. Hello, everyone. I am Kelly Newcomb, founder of Brave Parenting. Y'all, I'm so glad you've tuned in to another episode. I am solo today because I want to unpack what I've been deeply considering over the past several months. Now, before I get started, I just want to ask you to please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really does help other people find the podcast. And frankly, we need more brave parents out there doing this hard work of managing media. So please subscribe and share the podcast with a friend. It helps us greatly. All right, so let's get into this. I titled this a pretty provocative title to this podcast. It probably has you wondering, what have I changed my mind on about Snapchat? So first, let me start by explaining to anyone, especially who's new to the podcast, that I have long held that Snapchat is the worst of the worst social media apps. When my children turned 16, they could choose a social media platform to start with, and I never allowed Snapchat to be that option. I just didn't even allow it into my house for all the years that my kids were teens. Everything from the addictive compulsion to keep up these nonsensical streaks of pictures with other people, to the obscene and I would say useless stories in the Discover section, and especially the app's ability to know every single person around you and give you the option to sort of quick add them as friends. And on top of all that, the ability to share your location on SnapMap and the disappearing pictures. I could just go on. I just absolutely thought it was the worst. I have loathed this app, to be honest with you. And I've prayed. I've really honestly prayed that the Lord would intervene and make the company go under. That is how much I've honestly really disliked Snapchat and their motives. And honestly, I think I'm very justified in feeling this way because Snapchat is the app that predators tend to find their victims on. You know, maybe they meet them in a video game or on some other app or platform, but it always seems to be that the story goes that they move over to Snapchat. Why? Well, you know, because like I said, the conversations disappear. You can text and communicate with someone, and then within minutes, that conversation is gone. Pictures can also be hidden sort of behind a password-protected door, if you will. And the scary reality is, of course, your location can be tracked. So when it comes to predators or just creeps who are up to no good, Snapchat is where they tend to hide out. Not only that, but gaining access to one victim on Snapchat immediately opens the door to all of that person's connected friends. That aspect of Snapchat, to just sort of be able to add friends' friends and their friends' friends, it's exponential. And you can have so many connections that you don't even know the people that you're connected to. And predators love that. I once went to, actually just recently, a couple months ago, went to a presentation from an FBI investigator who talked about the dangers and the exploitation that goes on these apps. And he pointed directly to Snapchat as one of the common denominators in all the cases that they investigate. At some point, Snapchat is always involved. So when I list out all of these risk factors, you know, Snapchat really does sound pretty terrible. And I think it can be and still is. I believe the very foundation of Snapchat is evil. You know, if you don't know this, the app was built on evil intentions by college students who wanted to be able to share nude pictures of girls that they had collected and then have them disappear so they wouldn't get caught or get in trouble. And that's just evil. That's exploitation. I don't care if these college guys were brilliant. I don't care if they were drunk, if they were sober. The very intention of doing that to women, it's undignified and it's wicked. And obviously, as I've just laid out, the app has been continuously used by Satan to perpetuate evil. The thing about Snapchat, however, though, that I've come to realize is that most young people actually understand and recognize this dangerous side of Snapchat. And they tend to not maybe tread toward those tainted waters. And of course, I talk mainly about kids who sort of, I would say, have their head on straight, if you will. They've been raised to definitely know better, and maybe they don't have any sort of trauma, sexual trauma that might lead them to seek out someone who might be an adult predator aiming to, you know, meet up with a 13-year-old girl or something like that. Snapchat has been in the news a lot, and kids have been warned about its dangers. And I think the reality is for, like I said, most sensible teens, once they use the app and they quickly realize how it works and how quickly you can add connections upon connections, they realize that they need discernment in who their friends are and what type of pictures they're sharing and whether or not they share their location. Now, my husband and I have a lot of interaction with teenagers who are not our children. Almost all of my children are 18 or over now. My husband teaches at a private Christian school, and both of us lead high school ministry at our church. And the high schoolers at our church come from either the very large public schools in our town. Some are homeschooled, or some attend different private schools. And so they come from obviously all different walks. And we not only get to see them interact with their phones, but we are privileged to be in a sort of mentorship relationship with these teens. And it grants us a lot more insight into their habits than I would say typical parents get. And what we have found is that teens, by and large, have Snapchat primarily and often only as a communication tool. Now, I know for myself, and a lot of parents out there hate this fact. I do. I hate the fact that teens use Snapchat as their default texting app. It seems ridiculous to adults, and I've always insisted to my own kids, you know, if your friends were truly your friends, they would text you to communicate with you. They would just use the traditional text functionality of a smartphone. You know, having Snapchat should not be a relationship qualifier. And perhaps my kids did see who their true friends were by who actually texted them versus who left them out because they weren't on Snapchat. But nonetheless, we can hate the fact all day long that teens use this for communication, but the fact hasn't really changed over the last 6 to 8 years since I've started Brave Parenting. It is the tool that they use to communicate. And most teens only want the app to be able to have that communication. If they're in a class project and they need to communicate with someone, but they don't have that kid's phone number or they can't contact them via email, Snapchat is just their default way of communicating with anybody in their school. Now, another piece of insight that my husband and I have gained in our relationship with teens is that they rarely go to the Discover section. For a long time, I've really, really despised the Discover section. And really, teenagers who are Christian or at least seeking Christianity enough to come to youth group every week, what we have found is they recognize that all of that is garbage. Just as I have been stating for years, they know that. One look at it tells them that that is garbage. And that is not where they're getting their news. That is not where they're getting their entertainment. That is not where they're just filling the void of time of their life. They may look at their friends' stories, but they don't hang out on Snapchat, filling that time, looking at random people's stories. It is very much a open the app, respond to a text, maybe send a snap, close the app, and they're done. And I will say, yes, teens are still fulfilling all of these daily streaks with all of the people that they have for years. And that still continues. And it, while I would argue it's still really dumb, when I continue on talking about this, we're going to realize that that's actually pretty benign. In the grand scheme of all the different social media apps, keeping up a streak like that is frankly pretty benign. So let's get into what really has then changed my mind. Because the fact that I have witnessed some Christian teens using the app differently than, say, maybe secular middle schoolers. Is that just what's changed my mind? And the answer is yes, but really partially. What happened is my husband and I have just had a lot of deep conversations about, well, I think it started actually when he suggested that maybe we try and reach more of the target audience on TikTok by posting Brave Parenting things on TikTok. And I was adamantly against it because I just said, no, I want nothing to do with TikTok. And that started this conversation as to why am I so against TikTok? Which, of course, I wouldn't post any content on Snapchat either, right? So I would had an equal disdain for both platforms. But it just got us talking more deeply about which apps have the most profound negative impact overall. So when we look at that, when we look at how much time people spend on the app, How does an app shape or change a person's behavior, either when they're on the app and when they're off the app? Like how much control does the app have over not only time spent, but over their willpower, over their sleep, over their thoughts? And I would say the most important factor is when we consider every app is, how does it impact worldview? Does an app, a social media platform specifically, have the power to change what you believe? Because the state of the fact is a lot of teens are not maintaining their faith after high school. They are either going to college or they're going out into the workforce, and they are completely walking away from the faith that they may have been very involved in and would have even professed and owned all through high school. And so we have to say, okay, what is shaping their worldview? Is it just the culture, or is it the social media platforms that they are living on? And as we parsed out all of the answers to that, what we realized is that TikTok is worse than Snapchat. And that was pretty profound. And it actually took me a little while to get there because I have held such long, hard, staunch beliefs against Snapchat. But I really do feel, as I've prayed about this and I've researched some more numbers regarding how teens are using both apps, I do feel confident in saying that TikTok is worse than Snapchat for teens. So TikTok has the most time spent on it by teens than any other social media app. A November 2023 survey showed that teens spend an average of 1 hour and 47 minutes on TikTok. An hour and 47 minutes on average. That means that some are spending a lot more time than that. In a 2023 study, they also found that teens ages 11 to 17, they're spending less time on Snapchat, with only 3.6% of their average daily time on Snapchat, but 38% of their time going to TikTok. So 3.6 of the time spent on Snapchat, that is, again, it's answering texts, it's just doing those quick communication, but 38% of their time going to TikTok. And that is pretty significant. I also think about the Common Sense Media report titled Constant Companion. We did an entire podcast reviewing that last fall, in fall of 2023. And what they did is they tracked hundreds of teens' phones activity for a week through installed software. And the findings was that teens go on TikTok. Well, not only do they go on it a lot, but they also specifically go on it when they just have a few minutes between class, when maybe a class is getting ready to end or they're walking to their next class, so they can get quick bites of entertainment. And I think that was actually the language that some of these teens use, is this idea of a quick bite of entertainment. That's a powerful testimony to the power that this app has. That those few minutes have to be filled with entertainment is tragic. You know, why not talk to someone? Why not think about or ruminate on what you just learned in the class that you were in, or what you're going to be doing in the next class? I always say, you know, that those few minutes that we have, that's reflective time that helps us process thoughts and consider our actions, our behaviors. How can we think about others in those few minutes? Filling every void of time in our day with entertainment is so unhealthy. When we think about the depression and sadness, loneliness, all of this, well, this clearly has to have a part in that, because when you are not taking even the fewest minutes to just be quiet in your own thoughts, in your own head, in your own reflective state, it is very unhealthy. And I know I sound old and sort of fuddy saying all that, but it is the truth. This is not healthy to fill every single minute with entertainment, because it's like, it's the addiction, right? It's the, let me just pull the lever of the slot machine and hope to get a dopamine hit every time I open that app. I mean, not only does it demonstrate a serious lack of willpower and self-control, which for us as Christian parents, we should want our children to demonstrate the fruit of the spirit of self-control. And this app completely takes that away. So if we just look in time spent, an hour and 47 minutes a day, that's insane. That's insane how much time. I don't think I think my average daily time on my phone altogether in every single app is about an hour and 47 minutes. I couldn't imagine spending that much time on one app altogether. So in that way, yes, TikTok is worse than Snapchat. Then when we consider how the app shapes behavior on and off of TikTok, you know, we recall the TikTok challenges. And these TikTok challenges, they still persist and they are still leading, unfortunately, to tragic deaths of young people. I just read the other day of another teen girl whose death was the result of the one chip challenge. So sadly, people or kids, you know, are still viewing these challenges as ways to gain notoriety or infamy or just even gain some viralness and gain followers by participating in these challenges. And then I consider the research done by the Wall Street Journal when they programmed bots with cues of sadness and then set them off onto TikTok. And they discovered that the TikTok algorithm was able to identify and magnify those hues of sadness that was kind of put in as an underlying factor in those bots. It cued in on that. And within 224 videos, which sounds like a lot, but it took 36 minutes to view 224 videos. And by that time, by 36 minutes, 93% of all videos shown were of sadness, depression, self-harm, and suicide-related content. So it took 36 minutes for the TikTok algorithm to identify unseen, maybe, you know, just underlying hints of what that bot was going through. Well, that is going to be the same for a teen. And remember, 36 minutes, they're spending an hour and 47 minutes on the app. So every day could be different. The algorithm could be cueing in on whatever it is that they're thinking about, what they're stressed about, what they're concerned about. Are they sad? Are they happy? Giving them and feeding them all of this information based on that, because the algorithm, unfortunately, is just that good. And that's a form of mental manipulation on the not fully formed brain of teenagers that I frankly think should be illegal. I mean, if you think about that, if someone was to kidnap a child and then show them radicalized content as a way of desensitization to harm and abuse, right? The world would be outraged and they'd be seeking criminal charges for that sort of activity. But yet that's essentially what is happening on TikTok. If you just look at the radical ideas that kids have bought into over the past 4 or 5 years, and TikTok has dominated that. The gender ideology, the pro-thinness, pro-anorexia content, they all show how influential this app is and how radically it can change behavior. I mean, even a little less benign, but look at the ridiculous Sephora tween phenomenon going on about how girls like 9 to 10 years old are spending hundreds of dollars for this skincare and beauty treatments because it's all the rage on TikTok. Okay, first of all, why are 9 and 10 year olds on TikTok? Right. And it was also going on YouTube. It's also going on Instagram. I realize that. But still, why are they on this? Of course, that's a whole nother question. And that, well, frankly, it's really, I think the whole part of the problem, though. Why are parents allowing young people ages 9 and 10 to be on this app? And that is so, so concerning because of the garbage that is promoted on these apps. And you can say that there is moderation. And yeah, there is, but TikTok is not going to moderate skincare routines for girls ages 9 to 10. They're just not going to do that because it's not harmful in and of itself. But what happens is the algorithms just start perpetuating this behavior until it fundamentally changes what these girls, these young girls believe that they have to do, that their offline behavior has to reflect this sort of beauty treatments. This is insane. These are children. And so again, it just goes to show the power that TikTok has, especially within its algorithm. Not only that, this is where teens are getting their news from. A 2023 Pew survey found that 1/3 of Gen Z adults, so under 30, regularly scroll TikTok for the news. Okay, so that might not seem that radical, only 33% of Gen Z adults under 30. And that is up 255% since 2020. And that's actually probably more of the concern. It's that all young people, this is their new way of finding news, of getting news. I even read one statistic that about 70% of teens use TikTok as their like search engine instead of Google to find, whether it be content related to finding a restaurant where they're at or finding some place to go to do something entertaining or fun, to find a news story. They're searching TikTok for that instead of Google. Whereas I would say older adults maybe now might be using ChatGPT to find these sort of results, because we know that the Google search is having its own little existential crisis. But teens are using TikTok. That is where they're getting their news from. And they are considering the opinions and short pieces of news that are on TikTok as their primary sources of information. And that is concerning in and of itself, because a lot of it, yeah, you might have some actual like CNN or Fox News clips from TikTok on TikTok that they're getting their news from, and whether you call that reliable or not. But a lot of it is people's opinions of what is going on in the news. And that, of course, is concerning, because you have no idea what type of opinions or ideas, how much truth is in them that our teens are taking in. And that really leads us to, I would say, the biggest concern, the foremost concern, and that is worldview. If you compare to how worldview comes across on TikTok versus Snapchat, it is just wholly obvious that TikTok is way more powerful at shaping, or I would even argue maybe reshaping, worldview. A big part of that is that algorithm. And that algorithm cannot be monitored or modified by parents. And frankly, the influence of a parent is almost void compared to the authoritative voices that are algorithmically reaffirmed on TikTok. Kids take in those voices that are perpetually given to them through that algorithm as authority. The content delivered to young minds on TikTok often shifts their ethics, right? It challenges them to reconsider what is right and what is wrong, what is good, what is evil, what is holy, and what is sinful. And some might think, well, you know, that's just a regular part of life, part of coming of age, as you wrestle with these notions. And while that is true, that is part of finding your identity and becoming an adult, TikTok is not a natural or organic way of wrestling with right and wrong, because it includes this algorithm. It has this bend towards maximum engagement that wants to feed you one idea of what is good and what is evil, what is healthy, what is unhealthy, what is safe and what is dangerous. The fact that so much time is spent on the app, and we know that the algorithm can identify thought patterns and moods and then exploit them, this is not a natural way, a coming of age discernment of truth, of deciding what is good and what is evil. This is not natural. Not only that, it is warping young minds to just know the truth. TikTok warps their sense of self-worth and identity. They can truly believe lies and believe them so strongly. As I said, it dictates their behavior off of the app. A parent can tell their child for the entire like course of their 13 years of life before they get on TikTok that they are loved, that they are beautiful inside and out, that they have a purpose given to them by God, that they are made in the image of God. But when that algorithm hones in on an insecurity and then feeds them lies that they are wrong about their gender, or that they are fat, or that they are ugly, or that they are oppressed by their parents who enforce rules and boundaries, and that you should never be a Christian because of this, that, and the other, all of this shapes their identity, all of it. It does not matter how strong they might have been before getting that app. Those algorithms have the power to transform during those precious early teen years before the brain is fully formed. It is like peer influence on steroids, like to the nth degree. It's never been easy to form your identity, to develop your ethical stance, what you believe to be good and evil, right and wrong. But before TikTok, it was never a global influence in 30 seconds to 3 minute videos programmed to exploit vulnerabilities. So now it is so difficult. But what's interesting is that teens don't look at TikTok saying, oh, this is making my, you know, my teen years so much harder because I can't, you know, figure out my ethical stance and I can't form my identity in a more authentic, organic way. They don't think that. They're not recognizing that this is happening because they are entertained, because they are numbed from those feelings. They just take it in, they consume it, it shapes them, but they're not actually cognizant of it happening. If the parent has not so firmly established a sense of worth, a sense of purpose, identity, and ethics into a child before they get on TikTok, and I would argue that you can't do that before all up until age 13, like it really takes till about age 16, then TikTok will shape them into its own mold, especially if they are given unlimited time on it. It is extremely difficult, if not impossible, for a young person to resist the influential power of TikTok. It is so entertaining. It is so quick and easy to get dopamine hits. It is so eminently possible to have a platform where thousands of people follow you and worship you, and you're popular and you're famous, and all of this combined makes TikTok the worst app for teens. Worse than Snapchat, hands down. Now, if you're thinking, oh, great, well, I've given my kids TikTok because Kelly has said in the past that, you know, TikTok is the only one with parental controls. And while that is true, they are the only ones with parental controls. Let me tell you that it's not the end of the world, because it is possible to use TikTok without falling deep into its grips. Time limits is certainly one way. It is essential that if your child does have TikTok, and you already know that it's going to be very difficult to take that away, time limits are the primary way. But it is the primary way to get this under control. Only looking at TikTok for 10 minutes a day is very different than looking at it for 2 hours a day. You know, another boundary that can be set up is them not posting content. A lot of teens do this anyway. They have TikTok only to watch it. They're not necessarily posting content. This eliminates the performative aspect of it, the worship-seeking behavior. That really adds a whole different dimension for teens. And so that can be another way that TikTok can sort of be reined in. If your child does have TikTok, and now that I've said all this, you're super concerned, I would encourage you to ask your child if you can sit beside them and see the content that the algorithm is giving them. If you have access to their phone, you know, at night, you could just look at it yourself, but it may be more telling of their response and their reactions as you sit beside them and they allow you to see what they see. You know, explain your concerns. You know, explain what you hear in this podcast and that you are concerned. Ask them to see so that you can be reassured of their use of it. Otherwise, you know, you can obviously say, hey, we might just need to remove this app altogether because these are the concerns that I've had. I've actually seen this in your own behavior, in your own maybe sort of ethical shifting. And I'm kind of curious, you know, how much is this app influencing you? Now, going back to Snapchat, does the fact that TikTok is now worse than Snapchat, does that change my mind about allowing teens to use Snapchat? No, it does not really at all. I still think that Snapchat poses unnecessary dangers that can be avoided. I would never suggest a child use Snapchat, but if the battle for Snapchat is fierce in the sense that they are being left out from their friend groups or from different aspects of maybe communication with different sports or groups associated with school, and first of all, they have to be at least 16. I would never, ever, with any social media platform, allow it under 16. But if the battle is still fierce and they are still wanting a social media platform, they are demonstrating maturity, they're demonstrating wisdom, they understand that there are dangers with Snapchat. But I think I would come to a place, I think I am at that place, where I would say if they're going to choose one platform and the choice is between Snapchat and TikTok, I would say allow Snapchat before allowing TikTok. And I'm gonna admit to y'all, that sounds crazy that I'm even saying this because I never thought that I would say it. Because again, I know the dangers with Snapchat are real. But when I look around and I see the kids growing up angrier, more divisive, lazier, like just constantly looking at their phone, lonelier than ever, relationships suffering. You know, they're not only that, they are abandoning the truth of Christianity for false religions, false ideas, new age, humanism, moral relativism, right? That is like the predominant ethos. And I cannot help attribute that to TikTok. Now, I don't have scientific research, you know, to back all of this up. This is my opinion, but it's my opinion based on over 8 years of researching, writing, and reporting on social media. It's my opinion based on raising 7 teenagers. And it's my opinion based on a lot of conversations with teens themselves. I haven't come to this new opinion lightly. And honestly, you can choose to disagree, and I would love, love, love to hear other people's opinions on this. I take my role leading Brave Parenting and guiding parents through the world of social media and teens very seriously. I am very prayerful about what opinions I share and what information I put out there, how I put it out there, how I present it. And because of that, that is why I really wanted to share this new opinion that I have with you. Because as we go on, I know the people who are listening to this podcast, you are the parents who care deeply. You are the parents who are already doing this hard work. But I know that what we present here and what I share with you as my little small niche of expert opinion, if you would even call it that, then helps you to go equip other people around you, whether that be your family, your friend groups, your church, the people who are listening all over the country. And I think that it is really time for us to rethink TikTok and to start new conversations about it in these groups, in these families all across the country. I think that when we can present TikTok as a more dangerous app for changing worldview, frankly, I don't think the president's wrong. I think that it is a threat to democracy. I think that the way that it can radically transform and even create just uniform sort of ideas amongst young people, it's dangerous. I mean, how did Hitler get so many people to be on board with his radical ideas? He did it through children. He presented radicalized content in a way that changed everybody's thoughts and behavior. And I think that adults need to get off TikTok. I know that a lot of adults are on TikTok, and I don't think you're spending an hour and 47 minutes on it a day like teens are. But if your child knows that you're on TikTok, knows that that is a place that you find entertainment on, they are going to want it too. And it's going to become a very normal thing for a child to see TikTok to find that content to be a regular source of entertainment, of news, and all of that. And so I think, number one, parents need to get off TikTok. And two, I want, and I hope, and I pray that we all start having conversations about the dangers of TikTok and how it can influence children, especially away from the faith. So that's what I have for you. I've been thinking so deeply about this, especially as I finish up my thesis for my master's program. I am writing it on how we can really protect the solidarity and sacredness of the gospel and bring it forward when we look back to how the early church and even the church in the Middle Ages, the church during the Reformation, and the church today, how we can protect the gospel by being obedient to the scripture and being set apart from the world. And I believe that a lot of that is done by rejecting the lies of social media, rejecting the fact that we don't have to live on this and our kids don't have to look like the world by being on this. All right, friends, that is what I have for you today. I would love to hear your feedback. You can email us at podcast@braveparenting.net. If you have anything to contribute to this, I would love to hear it. Thank you so much for listening. Until next week, go and be brave.